ShoeCast. This is indeed Stitch Down ShoeCast, where we talk quality footwear, how it's made, and all the things we love about it. I'm Ben from StitchDown.com, and I'm here to tell you that the last comes first. It's an old shoemaking adage that's as true as it is catchy, and it's exactly why I'm so excited to be chatting today with Michael James of Springline, Northampton, England's last remaining last maker, and the chap they call Northampton's last man. I recently had the pleasure of visiting Springline while in Northampton, and there did appear to be other men in town, so it's not quite as dire as the name would make it out to sound from a like continuation of the human race standpoint, but it's a perfect nickname for someone who has done absolutely incredible and hugely important things over his decades-long career, with Springline carrying forward as one of the premier last makers in the entire world and the place for bespoke shoemakers to work with on their last. We're going to get just silly deep on Michael and Springline and the true alchemy that is last making. But first, I need to give a loving ShoeCast shout out to our sponsor this week, Nick's Boots, a Spokane bootmaker who is absolutely in a groove right now, creating fantastic boots, releasing new styles, all of it. Check out their YouTube channel, sign up for their newsletter. Nick's will also be one of our presenting sponsors at our boot camp event this October 6th and 7th in New York City, where they'll join more than a dozen other brands, quite literally from around the world, for the world's largest fine leather footwear gathering ever. If you are the kind of person who happens to like top tier boots and shoes, which it seems like you may be, you do not want to miss boot camp. Get $10 off already highly affordable tickets at stitchdownbootcamp.com with code ShoeCast. We'll see you in October. All right, it's time. Michael James of Springline, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the ShoeCast today. How's everything going? What are you wearing on your feet?
Hello, Ben. Hello, nice to see you. I at the minute, I've got a pair of evergreen Chelsea boots on. I'm a very iconic last, 82 last. Yeah, in a nice tan. A nice Ridgeway sole as well.
I love a Ridgeway. There's a little bit of divisiveness about it because they're not as elegant, maybe. I don't know. I like that look, and functionally, they tend to get it done for me.
I agree. It's my favorite rubber sole by far. Not sure why. It feels good under your foot as well. It just feels good.
So before we get in too deep, I'm itching for an update on something. When I was there in April, and man, does this true up my description of Springline as Willy Wonka's factory, but you know, for shoes, you were in the process of setting up this incredible system that will consolidate all the last shavings and sawdust, which I mean, you have to kind of eject it in the first place, but now burn them to heat the factory come winter. How is that coming along?
Yeah, no, it's getting there. It's been a lot longer process than we thought, to be honest. But it's going to work well. So obviously the lathes kick off a lot of sawdust, and there's all the scrap wood that we're cutting the bigger blocks into a smaller block, basically a last shape, and there's loads of offcuts of wood. There's two big hoppers being connected. One's just dropped the sawdust straight in and will burn. The other will be fed in, you know, so we'll have a chopper chopping up even smaller, feeding into the other hopper. I mean, it should be good. It's obviously going to save us on heating, which is one of the main reasons to doing it, but it's also going to save us a lot on skips, on bins. You know, we probably spend £800,000 a month just getting rid of wood waste, you know, which is crazy. It's been a long time coming, really. We've been talking about it so long, but we're nearly there. I think we're about a week away from it actually cranking up and starting. So
all right, burn it all.
yeah, I mean, obviously lowers your footprint, which is the main, you know, obviously the main reason. Next step is to look at solar panels on the roof. We've got a big flat roof coming over the factory, so we're going to look at putting some solar panels on.
Let's throw it way back. I'm pretty sure you got into last making because you wanted to get on a boat to France or something like that.
So when Margaret Thatcher was in power, I'm going to show my age now. When Margaret Thatcher was in power as prime minister, it was a good system. It was called a youth training scheme, and it basically got young people out of school into work. There was this 9-man yacht, which was part of the course, part of the youth training scheme, going to France, this old wooden yacht, still known as Duet, it was called, if it's still about, if anyone still owns a Duet and listens to this. Yeah, it's fantastic. So anyway, so I literally looked down this list of jobs, and it just had Springline, good with your hands. So I was like, okay, I'll do that one. because the yacht was going in a couple of weeks. It's 40 years this year, Ben. So 40 years I've been at Springline. Yeah, strange. I always remember at school as well. When I was eight and moved from London to Northampton, the day I left, the teacher in London done a little talk to the eight-year-olds on Northampton. And she said, shoemaking town. She started talking about some of the shoes, some of the brands, you know, some of the shops. And they say, almost, you know, is it a bit of destiny there? I'm not sure. What do you think? Was I destined to be in the shoe trade?
I mean, I love that the government is like planting that in your heads. And I have to admit, we had a chuckle or two when everyone kept referring to these work schemes. And in the US, a scheme tends to be something that isn't always the most above board, but over there, they seem good. Like, here you are.
I mean, it worked. Yeah, obviously, the pay was terrible for 2 years. They gave some of the money towards the company. So the company got some of the money and then you'd get some of the money. So, it you know, it did help. It got people into work.
You know, it's really not something that happens over here. And the more we learned about it, the more it felt like a very, very good thing. Let's say, you know, we could look at your progression at Springline or maybe somebody who started today, you know, in a similar fashion. You know, what do you start doing at the beginning of it all? What do you learn? How do you progress? Kind of how did you end up obviously doing what you do now?
Exactly the same as when I joined. We're really fortunate. We've got the youngest team we've had probably ever, to be honest. We've got some great youngsters come in. And basically what we do, they start off in the factory. They'll learn as many jobs as we can teach them, basically, you know, and it could be anything from putting the thimbles in to putting leather tops on last to shaving the toe down. You know, it can be any a number of jobs. There's about 36 operations, I think, to making the last. The ones we feel have got it and got an eye for it, et cetera, because you sort of see it quite quickly. We'd get them up into the model room because that's, you know, that's probably the most highly skilled and the bit you've got to learn the most on, and get them started. And say within 2 or 3 months, you'll know if they're going to be a model maker.
Yeah. So there's like something innate there.
Yeah, no, it is definitely. Yeah. I think, you know, it's eye and hand coordination, but also, you know, over the years, you don't even have to measure a last almost. You can see whether a last is too long and too short in the fore part. You can see whether the crank or the waist is right or wrong. You know, it's so easy to see it once you know it. Obviously, there are measurements to check all that. If you haven't got the eye and you learn all the measurements, you'll still not be very good at it. But if you can have an eye for it and then learn the measurements, you'll be good.
Before we get into Springline's model service and bespoke lasts and production lasts and shoe trees and all that, I'd love to dig in a bit on what are the base fundamentals of a shoe last. And obviously they can be made in any shape you can imagine, any size, but what elements do you feel are essential for any shoe last?
With a shoe last, you can have a shoe last or a shoe that's pointed, long, square, short. But the fundamental part and the bit that's going to make them fit is you've got to get the back part of the last fitting. So from your joint of your foot going to the back of the last, that's the bit that's going to hold your foot. You can make a clown shoe. You can have a great big round toe on it and have it as long as you like. But as long as that back part holds your foot back into the shoe, it'll work.
How does that happen? How do you get it to stay in there?
Measurements, you know, tread widths, seat widths, joints, waist, instep measurements. It all comes down to holding that foot back.
What do you understand about what's changed over time with shoe last? Let's call it maybe from the early 20th century when footwear began to become more standardized to now.
Yeah, certainly even in my time, so 40 years, when I first started, feet were smaller, feet were narrower, men's and ladies. Basically, people's feet are getting bigger. They're getting wider. People are getting bigger and their feet are going with it. And that's the main change.
What about in terms of the forms or the fundamental measurements of it all? Like, when was that all figured out really well? Because at a certain point, I imagine that, you know, people were just getting blocks and they put them on their feet. And then they probably cared about how they looked maybe before they fit really well. one day it seemed like a lot of those kind of base fundamentals were figured out and codified and okay, this is how we do it now. And then you can change everything else again, you know, how it looks, the math behind it all. Like, do you have a sense of when that was determined and kind of set in stone?
I've just been reading an article by Sterling Lass, actually, from the US. So they're gone now, but they were a good last maker. I remember them when I started. They were very high quality. Basically, when measurements, et cetera, started getting put in place is when manufacturing, the Industrial Revolution started happening. So once the machines and things, then they had to start putting set measures between a size, half size, between fittings. Really, to start uniforming things. Before that, everything was handmade, hand sewn. You were literally making something bespoke for that person. So it just sort of evolved into as manufacturing evolved. Really, the date of when that was set, I'm not sure. Without looking into it, but I would say you're looking at a couple of hundred years ago. It would have started having set measures, English grades, US. Harris Point, Japanese. I mean, that's another thing you need to learn as you become a last maker is the differences in measures in different continents.
Let's pretend somebody from a continent comes to you and says, we want to take advantage of your model service. Shoemaker wants a completely new last. They come to you. What happens?
We get designers, developers. Part of the service that Springline do is a design development service for brands that don't manufacture in the UK, manufacture all over the world. We develop last for these brands. The starting point can be anything. It can be a shoe. It can be a competitor's shoe that they come in with. It can be a drawing. It can be a sole unit. It can be a molded heel. A lot of designers, developers, they have, obviously they're working for top brands. So, and they usually put a spec with it. So there'll be heel height measures, toe lift measures, how distant to the toe from the ground. They'll let us know what depth the sole is or what height the heel is. You know, so we get pretty good specs most of the time. But I say sometimes it can be a little drawing. I remember once I was abroad when I was a lot younger, and I remember we were drawing this shoe designer. I'm not going to name. Drawing the design he wanted on the toilet wall in this pub in Dusseldorf. And he's drawing it because we'd obviously had a couple of drinks. And I was like, yeah, I know what you want. I know. So I took a photo of it and brought it back. And it went into bulk, you know, this drawing on a toilet wall.
You have a shoe or a drawing or, you know, a drawing on the wall in a pub bathroom. You know the direction that you need to go in terms of what something should look like. What happens after that?
Most of the time with brands or factories, we tend to always use their styles, if they're existing customers, their old last shapes, so their old model shapes as the starting point. Reason being, because obviously they've, you know, for instance, with Crockett and Jones, so we're redeveloping something they've already got. We'll always start with one of their existing lasts and it'll evolve. It's basically evolving. So we'll get a copy of that in wood, in hornbeam. And that will become the new model. And then we'll work on that to the spec of the new shape. We're using files, rasps, sandpapers, templates, bottom patterns, and tape measures to measure it, to get all the measures right. And then from that, the customer will get a sample pair of shoes made. So they'll get their pattern cut to the last. Those are the last is first. Pattern cutter will receive the last. He'll cut his pattern to that last. Then they'll probably order a top size, a bottom size, so they can then start grading their patterns. And then hopefully, fingers crossed, it goes to bulk production.
How long does the process usually take?
You know, if you've got a really good base, it can take 2-3 hours. If you've got a lot more work to do on it, it can take a day, 2 days. You know, we're still doing it on the bench rather than CAD. There is CAD that you can use to do certain things, but you're always going back to the handcrafting. It's a very touchy-feely thing at last. It's very, you know, it's very ergonomic. You've got to hold it. You've got to look at it. You've got to look at those lines. CAD hasn't mastered that yet.
For, you know, an individual brand, you know, manufacturer, maker, that you'll start with, quote-unquote, base last of theirs. Is it just because the fitting is going to be similar for customers? Like the look is going to be the same? Is there a reason that you wouldn't start just kind of from scratch, especially if they wanted something very different?
So they've got existing lasts in their range that they've made shoes. So they'll know the history and the sales of those shoes on that last. So they'll always go back to one that's doing really well. You know, they'll go, right, okay, the 349, we've been selling a lot of shoes on that. We've not had many people have any fit issues. You know, that's got to be a good base. You know, to start from scratch, why would you not use that history and build up a knowledge that you've got? It makes sense. If you're ordering online and you've got a pair on the 379 last, you pretty comfortably know that the new last that's been developed and the new range is on is going to fit very similar to the shoes you've already got.
You mentioned grading the last, essentially, you know, creating a run of different sizes that all, you know, correlate to each other. How does that happen? Is it just literally adding millimeters, you know, in the right places? And like, is that tricky? It's always kind of boggled my mind.
Once you've prepared your model, you've got all the right measurements on that model, so you're master. There's lathes in the factory. They turn two pairs at a time from your model. So the model either goes in the lathe to be copied, so this dummy wheel will fill the model, or you can digitize the model. You digitize your model and you can turn on data lathes. Again, turning one pair or two pair at a time. So on those lathes, there's grading implements for length and fitting. And basically, as you go up and down your sizes, you're altering the lathe to get the correct sizing or fitting from that model.
So I'm very excited to get into how bespoke last making, which in many ways is the most elevated form of the craft, how that works. So can you take me through it? You know, obviously how it's different from creating one that is, you know, kind of for more production last.
Bespoke, you are working to the customer's measurements. All the standards go out the window, really. So all the fitting implements and the measurements between each size. We still do this by hand, but you can have, you can send in scanned measures of feet, but we still like to do it a traditional method where we're measuring the client standing or sitting with a foot draft. So we're measuring around the foot. We're taking set measures on the client. From that, you literally, and then you talk to the customer. They've usually got a good idea of what shoe they want. So whether it's a brogue, whether it's a derby, whether it's a loafer, 6-inch stiletto, we would discuss it with the customer of what they want. You'll come up with some toe shapes, etc., and work with them to get what they want and to give them the perfect fit. Again, with bespoke, you know, it's always good to allow for a first fitting, as you would anything, whether you're having a suit made or a shirt made. You'd always go in for a fitting to check shirt maker would make the alterations. Do you want some props?
I do.
Okay, let me get a foot draft. Okay, Ben. So when we still draw around the customer's foot. You can see that. Obviously, this is now King Charles.
There he is.
King Charles. That we were very fortunate to meet and measure. Drawn around his foot, we've taken measurements around the foot and the lengths, etc. We've made notes of any bunions, etc., which, of course, King Charles hasn't got any bunions at all. you've got that, and then you look at some... and talk to the customer about what they want. So the first pair we done for him was a pump. And that's the process, really. You make the bespoke last from a foot draft, and you do a first fit. Any alterations that are needed, you do so, you know.
Besides the obvious one is made specifically to fit your foot, what do you see as some of the key differences between bespoke and ready-to-wear last?
Okay, so one of the main differences between a bespoke last and a manufactured last, you can do all the lovely shape underneath the last. You can get all the roll in the waist and get all the shape at the bottom of the client's foot. With manufactured last, you can't do that because they're being heels being attached, etc., by machines, that they have to have this shape pretty standard as a roll and, you know, through the waist, etc. But you're basically hitting all the curves, all the shape of the client's foot when you do bespoke, and obviously meeting their measures. Yeah. I mean, that's what you want, isn't it? It's obviously all handmade. It's an expensive item, and you want it really to fit you perfect and look the bee's knees. You know, it's got to. You want to go out there and you want people to see those shoes.
So I think I'm right on this. Behind you, all of the lasts, the master lasts, are right foot.
It's a strange one, Ben. We Northamptonshire always tend to work on right, if they can. Sometimes it's left. If we end up with a left sole unit come in, it's obviously very difficult to put a right foot last model on a left foot sole unit. So we do switch over every now and then. But Northamptonshire always learnt on right. It was, you know, taught in the colleges to do your patterns on a right foot last. Leicestershire was always left, which is really strange. But again, I think Leicestershire always hold their last toe pointing towards them when they're drawing on it or creating a pattern. Northamptonshire tend to hold it heel towards you. It's when they're drawing on. I think that's the reason for it. To switch from right to left for me now, it's you really have to take your, I can do it, but it takes a lot longer.
Look, let's take a break real quick and we'll be right back with Michael James. Man, we had a blast on a Shoecast way back digging into how into the Western scene Nick's Boots was decades ago. Well, boy, howdy, they're back at it with Nick's new Palouse, a classic Roper-style pull-on Western work boot. The Palouse is endlessly customizable in terms of last, including some throwback pointier Western lasts. Upper leather, outsole, toe bug, all of it. And it's built the only way the Spokane maker knows how. Hardcore-ly. Check out the Palouse at nixboots.com. Yeehaw! All right, we're back with Michael James, director of Springline Last Makers. So certainly the loudest part of our tour back in April was the room with all the machines, the lathes spinning and shaving lasts off of a master. Can you describe that process and how those machines work? And for anyone listening, you know, to the podcast, on the YouTube version of this episode, we have some video of these machines working. And they're incredible. They're so cool. How do those things operate?
Okay, so once you've created your model, the model goes downstairs into what we call the turning room, which is the room with the machines in. Well, basically, you're putting your model in the machine. There's a dummy wheel that fills the model. At the same time, the model's revolving, like so. Dummy wheel goes all the way along. So basically, it's a copycat machine. Why the dummy wheel's doing that? At the same time, the machine has got blocks in. Blocks of wood or plastic, two pairs at a time, and it'll copy it basically. And these knives, these circular knives, blocks of wood are spinning, and the knives will move along at the same process as the dummy wheel feeling the model.
And a lot of those machines, I forget if it was exclusively this, you know, they're kind of old, but you know, they're rather analog, right? Like it's literally a dial. You're not punching buttons on a keypad or anything like that.
So the older lathes are what we call mechanical lathes, and you're literally knocking a dial, a minus plus dial, to give you the length and fitting that you require. On the digital lathes, pretty much the same process, except you're turning from data rather than the hard model. You're doing it on computer. Yeah, you're altering the sizes and fittings on computer.
Got it. And these things have been around for, some of the oldest ones are how old?
Donzelli's were bought when Springline started. So Springline's 41 years old. So they're 41 years old. They're bulletproof, really. I mean, they do go down almost like an old car. You know, you get a bit made by an engineer. They come and, you know, lucky we've got a guy who's, because Donzelli machines are Italian, the old ones. We've got a guy an engineer who is Italian. You know, he comes in, he can read the plans to it because there is quite a lot going on. He can read the plans to it and he can work out quite quickly what happens if it does go down, what's wrong with it. You know, if we need to get a bit made, we get a bit made. But they really are, you know, Donzelli lathes. Mr. Donzelli married into the Beretta family, which is the Italian guns. So it's almost like gun money set this company up to make last machinery. And we think it's probably because they used to turn the butts of the rifles and the guns out of wood. Obviously, many years ago, they were wood.
What kind of wood is best for shoe last and why?
Okay, so for modeling, we use hornbeam, which is the hardest wood we use. But all our wood is farmed, sustainable. So hornbeam for models, beech for bespoke last. Yeah, and then for shoe trees, we use maple, beech, obechi, sapele, lime.
In terms of the tools that you use on either a model last or a bespoke last, can you take us through that?
And so we're using hand-cut rasps. So these are literally hand-cut, so they're really sharp. We're using files. We use stick measures. This is a last maker stick measure, which is a great tool. It's got European sizing on, it's got English, it's got American, it's got inches on it. I was given this by an old model maker who retired, Mr. Stuart Allen, who's no longer with us, and I treasure this. This is my, he passed this down to me, and I'll pass it down to someone else. So yeah, tape measure. Tape measure is very important because obviously you've got to take the measures of a last. Template gauges we're using. So template gauges to do profiles of toes, etc. They're all hand tools, basically saws and hammers. You know, it's all hand tools.
You mentioned the tape measure, obviously pretty crucial. What are the key measurements that are necessary to create, you know, any last, but certainly a bespoke last?
Key measures of a last. So we've got insole length, we've got tread width, we've got seat width, we've got the joint measure, which goes all the way around the last, waist measure, instep measure, which again go all the way around the last. We've got the long heel. The long heel goes all the way around the back and all the way to the front where the joint is. Short heel goes all the way around the back to where the instep is. Toe depths, big toe, little toe. They're the key measures, but there's a lot more.
In terms of history, what do you keep in the shop? I mean, you've worked on a lot of lasts over the years. Are they all there?
We've got around 5,000 models, hard models, so wood models, on shelves, in containers, in the back room, in what we call cubs, which is where you chuck quite a few in one box. We've probably got 3,000 or 4,000 as data as well. You know, we can be making maybe anything from 10 to 20 models a week in the model shop, possibly more some weeks, you know. So it soon, again, soon builds up. The shelves behind us need emptying again. So when they fill up, because the men's are all on the floor behind us, because the shelves are full up, we have to rotate them. So the ones downstairs, the older ones, we're basically any that don't go to bulk production with us that are just developments, we digitize and we keep it as a data record. We've got, obviously, all the models for Edward Green, John Lobb, Crockett and Jones, Trickett, you know, you see Churches. So we're proud to develop for all those. So we would never chuck those. They stay in the vaults.
All right, good. Yeah, I know you got to stay warm, but don't burn all the history.
Yeah, we're proud with everyone we work for, but for Northamptonshire is so unique in what's left in Northamptonshire now.
Is there a favorite type of last you enjoy making? I mean, bespoke or model or whatever it might be.
When the trade was a lot bigger, I was the model maker and sort of sales. It crossed over. I was model making and selling for Northamptonshire. So I just made mainly lasts for Goodyear welted shoes. You can make any last sexy. You can make an orthopedic last a bit sexy by putting some shape into it, but retaining the fittings. But ladies' lasts, I really enjoy.
How do some of those work? I mean, I've seen all sorts of men's lasts are kind of non-high heel lasts. And then when we were there, it's like, oh yeah, they need them for these too. I mean, the mind absolutely reels. Like, is it trickier to make a lady's last, like especially a severe high heel?
The variation is far greater on ladies. I mean, you know, look at that one. That's
like, how does that even work from a functional perspective?
Yeah, I mean, no pain, no gain. Yeah. Yeah, but it looks sexy. You obviously, again, you're trying to retain the fit of the last. You know, you're trying to retain the joint measures, the tread whips. Obviously, it gets trickier because the ladies or men's, it could be men's, ladies or men's is pushing down. You know, the way you're standing, obviously, everything's going into the. So you need to get the correct tread whips. You need to making sure there's enough room for when that foot is elevated and the pressure's coming into the fore part of the foot. There's room.
So Springline is also one of the premier makers of lasted and or bespoke shoe trees. One of the biggest surprises for me seeing them made live was just how much work goes into making shoe trees in general. There isn't some machine that just spits out finished shoe trees. There's a ton of handwork required. I don't know, there might have been 20 something steps. And we walked through them all, and it just made me realize how much a nice lasted shoe tree really justifies its cost in a way I didn't expect.
Obviously, from the initial, you're still creating a model. You're doing a shoe tree model, which is different to a last model. And then you're turning, you're prepping the wood, you're putting them in the turning machines that we spoke about earlier. And then they go into the finishing room. You know, they're sanded or scoured. We use what we call scouring, but it's like a sanding belt. Then they go on to a drum sander. There's breather holes put in to let the shoe tree let air into the shoe to breathe. So when you take your shoes off and they're all warm and sweaty, the idea of the shoe tree is to draw the sweat out of the shoe, and the breather hole is part of that. It lets air into the shoe. Yeah, and the process, and obviously we're doing different colors, we're doing different stains, so that's all the process. The polishing and waxing of them, nothing's varnished, nothing's sealed, it's all natural waxes, so the tree still helps the shoe breathe. It's all handwork once it comes off the machine.
You know, when they come off of the lathes, there's still a front and the back that was attached, so it was spinning, right? You got to take those off, you got to stand that down. Okay, one step right there. You know, for those kind of double post ones that you showed us, you got to put it on the drill press and drill those holes. Then you have to insert them. Like, for some reason, it seems like something, you know, the last itself is this hollowed thing and all the time in the world needs to be spent with it. And yeah, it just seemed like there was some like vending machine that just you put in a buck and it spits out a shoe tree. Like, turns out not the case.
No. I mean, the hinge ones are the longest. We do this, we do a tree with a, do one with a hinge on, so we can do one with a hinge on top, but we also do one with just the barrel showing, which is really smart. That's probably the longest process because you're recessing the part for the hinge to go in. You know, you're putting straight slotted screws in instead of posi drive screws, which takes longer, takes more time. You want to line them up, but we want to make the highest quality we can. You know, it's made in UK. You know, it's made in Northamptonshire. It's got to be top end. It's got to be the best we can make. And we're always looking at ways to improve it.
That trues up with what I saw. And then both your son and your daughter also work with you?
Yes. Yeah. Very lucky. Yeah. I've got my oldest son, Sonny, is really going to be, you know, the future of the model, certainly the modeling. He, you know, very fortunate. He come in and he started working with me. He's got the eye. So he's been here, I think he's been here 11 years now, which is crazy because, again, he's only 29 at the minute. So Molly came out of university. She'd done shoe design at university, went to a shoe factory, done a little bit there for a year or so, and now she's with us doing bespoke trees. So, again, there's a lot. You know, I'm going to hopefully she get her involved in hill making because we do for catwalk, we do a lot of hills, platforms, cork platforms, wedges, all that sort of stuff. So when the fashion weeks come along, we tend to be stacked out with hills and platforms and all sorts of strange things that go on the bottom of shoes.
Yeah, in terms of that future, I mean, you mentioned that you're looking to add a couple more people just because of the demand for production. I mean, what is the outlook for Springline, you know, for a couple of years, next decade?
We can grow, definitely. We've got lots of ideas. You know, we've gone through a change September last year, where the senior managing director, he retired, sold his shareholding. So we got quite a new partner involved in the business who's got lots of ideas. We see a growth, probably not so much on bulk last manufacture, but we see bespokes definitely growing. You know, there's more bespoke makers in the UK and probably across the world, you know, probably similar. Well, we work with some in the US and Japan. You know, we see that there is a growth there.
All right. One more, Michael, one more. We got to sell this once and for all. You make shoe trees, so you're a little compromised here, but there is this lore around the shoe tree, especially with cedar, which I don't believe you use, that it, you know, kind of sucks the moisture out, right? And that's how you keep your shoes fresh. Obviously, you know, the shape is maintained, but really it's about getting that moisture out. And then there are some people who say, no way, that's not how it works at all. What's the real story here?
I would say it is the deal. It is the deal. Now, when you put a natural shoe tree or an unvarnished or lacquered shoe tree into a shoe, especially when it's the correct, you know, it's the lasted tree to the actual last shape. You know, as they get older, obviously they start to lose a bit of their form. They're starting to take more of your foot form, etc. You put that shoe tree in, leather's moist, the leather insole's moist. It's basically contracting back onto that shoe tree, so it will draw the sweat out, definitely.
We're going to believe you again. You're in on this. You're selling the damn things, but we are going to believe you. In terms of wood, what is the most effective at drawing out the moisture wood wise?
Maple probably is what we use mostly, but yeah, obici, maple, beech, that'll do it. Every bit of wood we got would take the moisture out.
All right, I'm sold. Huge thanks to Nyx for sponsoring this episode and coming in strong to our massive boot camp event. I implore you to do whatever it takes to get yourself to New York City this October. Let's get after this thing. If you're digging this podcast and the kind of stuff that we discuss on it, the best way to show it is by joining the Shoe Party, Stitch Down Premium Discord, the beating heart of the community we've been building for almost half a decade now. Just $5 a month goes so very far to supporting the ShoeCast and all Stitch Down operations. The conversation in there is as good as it gets on the shoe internet. More info on stitchdown.com. But most of all, Michael, thank you so much for coming on today. This was a magical one. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you for having me on. It's been great. I loved it.
All right. That's it for this week. Take care of your shoes. We'll see you next time.